Welcome to the Next Level Law Podcast, where we explore innovative strategies to grow and scale your law firm in today's competitive legal landscape. Joining you each week are veterans in the legal space and law firm growth experts Arash Eskandari and Richard Perillo, coming to you with over 18 years of combined experience, successfully transforming legal practices. Our hosts are passionate about helping law firm owners take their business to the next level. If you want to exponentially increase your client base, revenue, efficiency, and profitability, you're in the right place. Stick around as your hosts dive into actionable insights and proven methods tailored specifically to help your law firm ascend to new heights. Time to get down to business.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Next Level Law Podcast. We're joined today by attorney Tama Cudman out of South Florida, also practices in New York and New Jersey. She primarily focuses on criminal cases, and we're grateful to have her joining us today on the pod. Today's pod is sponsored by Vertical 10. Vertical 10 provides full-service digital marketing solutions exclusively from law firms coast to coast, specializing in SEO, Facebook, and Google direct marketing. Tama, thank you very much for hopping on with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No, absolutely. Arash, welcome as always. Glad to have us back on together.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Glad to be here.
Yeah, definitely. So very fortunate to be joined by Tama today. And we really like to start off the podcast, Tama, by you kind of, talking a little bit about your background and really what your primary motivations are in when you decided to enter the legal field. And maybe take us a little bit on that first part of the journey, and enlighten our audience about how you got started in this field, and maybe a little bit of the challenges you faced initially once you did get started.
Sure. So I have always been extraordinarily passionate about due process, criminal rights, individual rights. My family background really sort of conditioned me for this type of work. My father was born in Poland, and he and his parents escaped Europe prior to the Holocaust. And he grew up listening for survivors of the Holocaust. And so he was passionate about our Constitution and the protections that it provides to individuals. And so I was really conditioned to become a civil rights or a criminal defense attorney. I studied acting my whole childhood, and I was torn between my passion for acting and my passion for the law. And ultimately, my passion for the law won, but by being a trial attorney, the skills that I developed as an actress have applied in the courtroom and in my communication with prosecutors and, judges, juries. So it all sort of came together in this field of criminal trial practice. And I have to say that my practice is at this point predominantly white collar, which is, I like to call it fraud, right? I deal with fraud for the most part, although my practice certainly encompasses other kinds of criminal defense. That really has become the focus of my practice the last few years. And I came to it because my father was a businessman. My brother is a transactional attorney. I understood and speak the language of business. And so a lot of my cases involve representing executives and professionals and corporations that are under criminal investigation or prosecution.
Okay. And how long have you been practicing?
Almost 30 years. I hate to say it because that gives away my age, but yes, almost 30 years now.
Okay. So in your 30 years and
29 to be exact.
Okay. No worries. So in your 30 years, how long has it been since you've really been, transitioned over to the white collar side?
So it's an evolution, right? And I think most people's careers sort of evolve. Either through those are the clients that walk in your door or because you do a particularly good job in a certain area and it sort of something about it just sort of rings true for you and you develop a reputation in that area. So through the years, I have always been asked to represent individuals in white collar types of cases involving mortgage fraud, securities fraud. And now my particular sweet spot is actually in the healthcare fraud space. And part of, you know, being in South Florida is that obviously we have a lot of Medicare recipients and Medicare providers. And along with that, we see a lot of healthcare fraud here in South Florida. And so just by virtue of the market that I exist in, I've developed a particular sweet spot in that particular area. But my practice does encompass sort of, you know, all of what we think of as white collar fraud type cases.
Could you provide some examples on the healthcare side? I mean, with the baby boomer generation, you know, aging and so could you provide some examples of, you know, particular cases or situations that you and your firm, you know, specifically handle on that particular area of, you know, of fraud?
Sure. So what we're seeing a lot of right now are frauds involved with overbilling. So for example, you could have a physician practice or other kind of medical practice where they're using elevated billing codes or billing for services that are not provided or billing for services that are not actually covered, and the paperwork could be falsified. We are also seeing a lot right now in the telemedicine arena, involved with durable medical equipment and lab testing, so that, you know, Medicare or other government programs like Medicaid or TRICARE, which is healthcare for people in the armed services, are getting medical services or care that they don't actually need or that is not covered.
Okay. So how are these companies, these individuals finding you right now? I mean, I know you've got the wealth of experience and a very, you know, strong reputation, but how are you, you know, connecting with these individuals to, you know, to provide that representation?
So what I always tell young lawyers, and I think this is very important, is that first you have to develop your business card, right? And your business card is your wealth of experience and knowledge and the dedication and talent and hard work that you bring to all of your cases, right? So at the beginning of your career, you really have to focus on developing who you are as a lawyer and establishing your value. And I certainly did that. I mean, you know, working all day and night because I care and I'm passionate and I'm dedicated to what I do. And I think that when judges and opposing counsel and co-counsel see the dedication and energy and talent that you bring to your work, that starts to build a reputation for you. And then in terms of building networks, I always say to people, be a good friend. Be a resource for people. Be somebody that people come to and who you genuinely care about helping. And that sometimes means sending work away, right? Know what you're good at. Know what is within your wheelhouse. And know other people who are really good at what they do, so that when clients or other attorneys or people in the community come to you for help, you can refer them to the right people. And they know and can trust that when they come to you and you offer your help, it's really something that you can help with, right? So I believe in a genuine sort of what I would call marketing approach, right? It's not really marketing. It's just being a really good resource and a really good person in your community. And then get out there. If you have a particular knowledge or expertise, get involved with your bar associations, volunteer to teach, lecture, be a mentor to young attorneys. And that's another wonderful way to meet people who do what you do, who don't do what you do, but are curious about what you do, and to develop that network.
No, perfect. Arasha, jump in anytime. You know, I don't want to hijack all the questions and all that. So yeah, Arash, please feel free to hop in at any time. I do have a couple of follow-ups that I want to ask, because I know you had said before that You know, South Florida, New York, New Jersey, but then on, you know, on the criminal side, on the federal level, coast to coast. So can you kind of expand on maybe some of the challenges, you know, being an attorney based out of, you know, one location, but also having that, you know, that entire, you know, 50 states essentially that you can practice in?
So first of all, when I do practice out of my areas, geographically, I always bring in really knowledgeable and talented local attorneys. It's really important to be able to rely on local counsel. First of all, most states will require it. But secondly, even if the states didn't require it, I would want to have local counsel to educate me as to what are the judges like? Who am I appearing in front of? What are the local rules? What are the nuances that I might not be aware of with respect to the culture in that particular area, right? I mean, you know that anywhere in the country that you go will have its own culture and what will be appealing to that jury pool potentially or to that prosecutor. What are the particular concerns in that area? You know, so again, it's always about educating yourself and not having your ego lead. Know what you don't know. And I think that that's also a very important lesson for not only young lawyers, but also for more mature lawyers. You know, at a certain point in our career, we get into a comfort zone where it occurs to us, wow, you know, I know maybe a little bit more than I used to. And you can get sort of comfortable in that space and you can forget what you don't know. And I'm always reminding myself there's a lot that you don't know. And so I always make sure to surround myself by really good people.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Rosh?
Yeah, Tam, I was just, you know, I was on your site. I saw you had some insights regarding the whole FTX scandal and everything that happened with Bitcoin. I was just, what do you think is the future of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general, considering, you know, we've seen so much fraud and, you know, things like that. Do you feel like the government needs to step in and start regulating, or what are your thoughts on that?
You know, cryptocurrency has kind of been like the Wild West thus far. And certainly it is squarely within the government's lens at this point from a regulatory perspective. We, you know, there's a lot of concern about money laundering in association with cryptocurrency. And certainly from the consumer's perspective, how do you value this stuff? Where does its value come from? And, you know, there are speculators who are always willing to invest in things like cryptocurrency, but for it to maintain itself as a real currency that is going to be used by consumers, we're going to have to see regulation. So I think we're moving that way. I think the government wants to see more regulation. I think they're starting to impose more regulation and formulate additional regulation. You're going to see more of that. And you may, in fact, see some kind of formalization of cryptocurrency in conjunction with the dollar or the euro. I think that that's going to happen probably at some point down the road because it's got to be penned to something. And the government has a real interest in making sure that it is traceable, dependable, stable, and not being used to defraud investors and others.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. As much as I hate to have the big hand of government come down and start doing regulating and possibly over-regulating, this is one place where I think it is actually crucial, especially after seeing what happened with FTX.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious with, as far as your firm goes, I mean, you guys have been around a long time. What do you think are the key factors to your success and longevity?
I think it goes back to the basics. We have real talent in the firm. Every lawyer and every support person to a person is extraordinarily talented. We all value each other. It's a team practice. And it's a real dedication to the clients. There are clients of the firm that have been there for decades, literally, that have started as individuals We've watched them grow into entrepreneurs, and we've watched those small businesses flourish into medium-sized businesses and then ultimately large businesses or into mergers and acquisitions. And what I love about our firm is that we are so well positioned personnel-wise to cater to all of our clients' demands across the board. We have, you know, really, really talented commercial litigators, transactional attorneys, intellectual property attorneys, bankruptcy. I mean, you name it, we've got it. So we can take care of really almost any matter from a commercial perspective. And I form and chair, along with some members. Well, I'm the chair, but there are several members of the White Collar Group. And what we bring to the table is, for example, on the corporate and commercial front, if we have a client that suspects that any of their employees are engaged in wrongdoing or are concerned that maybe they're not being compliant, we do internal investigations, we do compliance reviews. In terms of mergers and acquisitions, I can be part of a due diligence team from that perspective. If a company receives an investigative subpoena or a civil investigative demand by the Department of Justice, we can address that. And so we can really protect our clients in a fulsome way. And from the success perspective, the fact that we operate as a team and that we are all, even if one attorney has the primary relationship with a client, nobody in the firm views the client as that attorney's client. They are all clients of the firm, and every attorney is aware of the client's needs and vocal about, you know, hey, if you have an issue, come to me because, you know, we want to be there for you. And if we can't take care of the issue that you're facing, then we'll get you to somebody who can. So it's really important to us to have that fulsome relationship with our clients and know the capabilities of the firm, make sure the clients know who are the members of the firm and what can they do for you, and so that we can address our clients from top to bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an issue with a lot of firms these days is, you know, they're not putting the client first. And you see the firms that are really successful, that's their motto, you know, client first. So,
right. And I will say this too. I think the size of our firm is important. We are a boutique. We're not a mega firm. And our billing is in line with that. And so it's in a comfortable spot for our clients. We don't overstaff matters because we have a million associates running around. We really determine what the needs of each matter are and scale appropriately. We like to call ourselves a boutique. And I think that boutique feeling is something that sort of the what I call middle market client appreciates, right? Mm-hmm. We're not representing Revlon in a transaction, but we do represent the companies that are being bought by Revlon, right?
Okay.
Or, you know, just as an example. So again, what's nice about our firm is that we can scale to any size client and also be economically feasible for the clients that are still growing. And that's important too, because we love to take our clients and help them in that building process. And it's our greatest pleasure when we see that company that we represented when it was one entrepreneur, and now they've got hundreds of employees and now they're getting bought out.
That's amazing. Yeah.
so that's a great thing about our firm.
Absolutely. Just curious, like, as far as the growth of the firm, how did you get to where you are now? Was it mostly just word of mouth, referrals? Did you guys do any marketing in the early stages?
You know, again, marketing for us has always been very holistic, very, it grew out of the quality of the work that we were doing, and it was mostly word of mouth. The greatest compliment you get is when you get referred somebody by your opposing counsel, or if somebody on the other side of a deal then comes to you and says, hey, I'd like you guys to represent me on the next one, you know, or on the other side of a litigation comes to you and says, you know, hey, I've got a friend who's got a legal issue. Can they come to you? Right. So it's always wonderful when it grows that way. And again, I always emphasize to young lawyers, your business card is the quality of your work. And the concern and care that you show to your clients when they know that they can call you. For example, the other night I got a text message from a client who had just been served with a lawsuit. They texted me at 10:30 at night, you know, and they have my cell phone number. And I immediately responded, was speaking with the other litigators in my firm, and we were dealing with it that night. The fact that we have those tight relationships with our clients means that they report that to their friends, and that helps us to grow. So, you know, you really can't approach marketing as a sales pitch, right? Because when it's not backed by anything substantial, you just sound like a used car salesman. And that just doesn't work. You have to not be thinking I'm trying to sell and I'm trying to market. I always look for relationships. I want people who are really talented individuals in my circle of friends. I respect them. I want to hear about what they do. I genuinely like people. And that to me is marketing, right? Getting yourself in front of people, making connections, knowing that if I pick up the phone, they're going to answer it for me and be there for my clients and vice versa. So no matter what form of marketing you choose, whether it be by doing podcasts, right? Or by lecturing or being out in the community, you have to back it up with the goods.
Yeah, no, I really like that. That aligns with basically how we do things. Same thing. Well, we have long-term clients, our clients that, you know, they call us anytime, weekends, nights, doesn't matter. And they're not used to that kind of service. So when they get that, they're just so appreciative because, you know, they're used to dealing with like the huge firms like Scorpion or whatnot, where they're just a number, you know, they just churn through. And, you know, we're like a boutique agency. We want to keep it that way because we like to have a relationship with our clients, and our goal is to help them to succeed. So that helps us succeed. So,
100%. And, you know, the other thing I'll say to everybody in any industry, a great way to get to know your community and have people get to know you, too, is through volunteers work and getting involved in community organizations, things that you believe in. Because, number one, I find the people who are involved in community organizations are really good people. They're people who care about their community. And it's just a great way to, first of all, take the pulse of your community. What's going on in your community? Get involved. And the other thing I'll say is firms like you are essential, because I may be the best lawyer in the world, but if nobody knows what I do or the results of my work, I'll be a very lonely, talented lawyer, right? So there's a place in every practice for companies like Vertical 10, who can help you to make sure that people see who you are, hear about your work. Don't be shy about posting on LinkedIn or talking on a podcast about the work that you do. It's important that people hear who you are and meet who you are. So this is a great way to do it. And I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, no, we love having guests like you on, because our listeners love to hear your stories. And for us, it's our passion is getting a success for our clients, because there's no better feeling when our clients reach out and they're like, oh, we got this case, we're growing, we're adding staff. You know, it's just, you know, that's the best feeling. That beats any kind of monetary benefit you can think of.
Absolutely. So, I understand.
Yeah.
No doubt. I know as a litigator, that's not every attorney's cup of tea. Right. And so there's, you know, you've got, you know, I mean, in Arash and I've talked about this a lot, you know, the majority are not comfortable in front of a judge, or, you know, attorneys are not comfortable in front of a judge, or not comfortable necessarily, you know, on trials. So can you talk a little bit about how, you know, you handle that pressure, you know, not just today, but, you know, when you were really starting to get into it? Because, you know, when we talk with attorneys, you know, a lot of them are very, you know, hesitant, nervous about that aspect. Maybe they're lacking the confidence because of the experience or whatever. Can you talk a little bit about your journey on that area?
Sure. So I say to young trial attorneys all the time that the day you are not nauseous walking into a trial is the day you need to hang it up, because you have somebody's life or money or other interests, right, in your hands. And that is a lot of pressure. So I don't want anybody to think that you ever stop feeling that pressure. And if you have, it means you've stopped caring. So that's not something that attorneys should be like, you know, if I'm this afraid, if I'm this worried, if I'm this nervous, then I shouldn't do this. Take a breath. That's not necessarily what it means. It means that you care. That being said, not everyone is a trial lawyer, right? And you have to know what your sphere of what I call hegemony is, right? Where do you fit in? For me, I had a background in acting. I studied acting my entire childhood. So I'm very comfortable in a audience situation. But being in a trial, being in a courtroom, whether you're arguing to a judge or you have a case in front of a jury, it's about communication, right? And it's not about putting on a show, although obviously we have to stage and think about what issues we want to get in front of a jury or a judge, right? But it's about communicating. It's about getting ideas across. It's about affecting the people on the jury. It's about having your client's story be told, whether it be from the legal perspective or the factual perspective. And so, you know, I always urge trial lawyers to think about what is the takeaway? What are your chapters? What are your points here? What is it that you have to establish or disestablish, right? In a criminal trial situation, theoretically, the defendant never, ever has a burden of proof, but the government or state does. And so when we're cross-examining, you don't necessarily go after every single point that you can. What is it that you want to establish with this witness? What is it that you want the jury to know? What is it that you want the judge to know? Tell your story, but first figure out what your story is. And for those people who feel like, you know, a trial seems overwhelming, sit back and just think in very simple terms, what do I want the judge and the jury to conclude at the end of this case? And then establish your story. And then establish all of the points that you need to get from A to Z, right? It's a long process. You have to know your documents inside out. You have to know your facts inside out. But, you know, don't be overwhelmed by the word trial, or the fact that you're going to be talking to people who are going to be judging the case in one way or another. Communicate. Your job is to communicate to people. At the end of the day, it's a courtroom full of people who just want to make the right decision, whether it be the judge on the law, or if you have a bench trial, the judge on the facts, and ultimately, if you're in front of a jury, the jury. They want to get it right. Help them get it right. Tell them what they need to know.
Well, and which leads me to my next question. And maybe there's not like a specific answer, but do you have a specific type of case you really enjoy trying? And then on the other side, do you have a specific type of case that you, well, not maybe refuse, but you would almost nearly refuse to try?
I absolutely believe in every person's right to trial. So I haven't yet said no to a case on moral grounds, or I will say that theoretically, if there were a client that I truly had an individual dislike for, such that it interfered with my ability to communicate with them, that means that I can't do my most effective job as a trial attorney. And so that would be a client that I would walk away from, but not on any moral grounds. It would simply be, I can't do my best job for you because we're not communicating.
Right.
I always, and look, there are moments in every representation where people have blowouts, right? It's emotional, it's high energy, it's high stakes. And there are going to be breakdowns in communication during that very intense relationship. Remember, when you're a lawyer handling a case that is going to trial or not, or being pled out, but a person's liberty is at stake, right? There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot happening there. And so you can be emotional. You can argue. You can butt heads. You can disagree about strategy and goals. But at the end of the day, your client is the client. It is their life, and you have to listen and hear them. And again, if that relationship breaks down to such a point that that can't happen, that's what I would walk away from. Clients, cases that I love, you know, they run the gamut. There are some cases where it's apparent to me that either law enforcement or the state or government have been heavy-handed, have done the wrong thing. You know, sometimes the law is on my mind in this particular case, because procedurally or due process wise, there's a real glaring issue. And then sometimes just factually, I believe my client, I believe in my client, I believe in their innocence, or I believe that the state has overcharged, and then my representation is incredibly zealous. I care a lot about not only my clients, but their families. You know, what happens in criminal cases affects not only the criminal defendant, it's affecting victims. It's affecting the client's family members. It's affecting parents, children, communities, businesses. Sometimes businesses wind up going out of business, and then employees are affected. So I find a lot of reasons to be passionate about what I do.
Oh, absolutely. And Arash, I think we, you know, with what we've been doing with the podcast and the quality of guests, you know, just like we're seeing now, like, I mean, there's the common theme of, you know, like we talked about before, really, you know, putting your client first and really, you know, establishing the relationships. And I think we're, you know, just, I know we've only been talking for, you know, 25 or 30 minutes, and we definitely appreciate your time. And I know we're coming up on some time constraints, but we really do see this common theme with a lot of the guests that we've seen, that, you know, the clients are coming first, and there really just seems to be a really high level of integrity, and your integrity has really come across as well. And Arash, I definitely can see that you're seeing that as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's good to see, because a lot of times, you know, attorneys get a bad rap, but I can tell you, I've been working with attorneys for 18 years now, and 95% of them have been fantastic to work with, and there's just a misconception that the public has on about certain attorneys, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, it's good to see this. And I was just curious, because when you were talking about, you know, when you're going to court and you get that queasy feeling and, you know, all the stress and everything, I couldn't do it. I don't know how you guys do it.
You know, we remember that somebody has to do it.
Yeah, thank God for you guys, because someone has. I was just curious. So, like, how do you deal with that kind of stress? You know, do you have any tips for, you know, the younger attorneys on how to maintain, you know, their mental health and everything like that?
Yeah, I do, actually, because it is a real concern, especially among litigators. We are seeing a extraordinary amount of depression, anxiety. among trial attorneys generally, and the bar, actually, non-litigators as well. Law is not for the faint of heart. I do see that the kinds of people who are attracted to law are people who do care about people for the most part. So just kind of, you know, circling back to the prior discussion, I do find that most attorneys go into law for the right reasons. But it's stressful and you're fighting for clients who have a lot at stake. And so I think rule number one is you can care about your client, you can be passionate about their case, but that you should never demonize the lawyers on the other side of the table, or their clients either, right? Because it's very easy to feel justified and passionate and fight for your client, which you should always do, but then become almost like a litigant yourself and then demonize the other side to a point that you lose your your ability to separate yourself from the case enough to be cordial to opposing counsel and to be ethical and professional. And we have to remember that everybody, all of the attorneys in the case, are hired by a party and we're getting one side. And it's important that, you know, our job is to be a counselor as well as a advocate, right? So sometimes part of that is having the ability to come together with the other side, hear the other side's concerns, hear what the problem is on the other side and why you can't get to a resolution or a common ground. Because at the end of the day, I think we all serve our clients best when we can find where's the justice point in every case, right? Now, sometimes, for example, I'm representing a client that I 100% believe is innocent, right? How do I communicate with the prosecutor as to why their case is weak so that perhaps I can walk them into the same conclusion? Sometimes you have to listen more than you speak. So I think dialing down the tension with opposing counsel that's inherent in litigation is the first step. Secondly, I urge lawyers to find an outlet, meditate, work out, go for a walk. I urge them also not to drink too heavily. We're seeing a lot of alcoholism and substance abuse among litigators. There are healthier outlets. Socialize with your friends. Call up a friend and say, you know what? I just got off the phone with a client who was screaming at me. I'm really stressed out. Talk to me. Make me laugh. Or if you think that you're at an impasse in a case and you can't figure out how to work it out, I have a huge phone book comprised of lawyers that I can call up and pick their brains and say, I need your wisdom. I need your guidance. Help me through this. This is really stressful. What's your perspective on this? And then have those friends that you call just to say, forget law. Take me away for, you know, Calgon, take me away for 10 minutes. Clear my head. Find those people, resources that take you away from the law for a period of time during the day. Like for me, I've been an avid horseback rider my whole life. And up until recently, horseback riding was my mental and emotional break. That connection with the horse, being outside, having an animal love on me, me loving on an animal, that was such a wonderful break. I can't do it right now because my back is hurting, but I replaced it with lots of long walks with my dogs. So for me, nature, walking, exercise, that is a good mental break for me. And of course, my children and my family. The other thing is, I think specifically women attorneys, men are good at saying, I think, and this is a generalization, so of course there are exceptions to this, but men have been in the workplace for always. Women are new to the kind of intense careers that we're having, right? And we're still trying to figure out what is the balance between our home life and work. And I was plagued with guilt early in my career that I was not just staying home and being 100% about my children. And I will say that I have found that communicating with my children, letting them in on what's going on in my world, explaining it to them, being present when I'm with them, I have, I think, a closer relationship with my children than some stay-at-home moms who kind of resent the fact that they're staying at home. And by the way, I have friends who are fabulous stay-at-home moms as well. I think the rule is to accept what you have chosen to do, communicating with your family what your commitments are, being present 100% when you can, and always giving your best wherever you are. There are times that your personal life and your family are going to have to give, because when I'm in trial, I'm in trial universe. But then there are times where I'm out of trial and I can put the work to the side a little bit, take a breather, and really focus on my kids. And my kids have told me that they think that I was more present in their lives than most of the other moms that they see. So that is a point of pride for me. And, you know, it's not that I'm there more than other moms. It's that I've figured out a way to really, when I'm there, be there. And that will help you to release some of the guilt that you feel as a mom or a dad. And as long as the kids feel like they understand what's going on and they're part of it, you're communicating with them, they'll be okay too. So I thank you for giving me an opportunity to address that.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I think you're right. I mean, it's all about balance, you know, the work-life balance, but it's just, it can be difficult when you're returning. Cause I mean, I've seen the hours you guys keep, cause I had to keep the same hours cause I worked along with attorneys, in the marketing and IT field. So I had some guilt early on myself because I was rarely ever home. My wife and I decided we were going to, she had some career opportunities and we decided like, let's not do that. You focus on the kids and I'll do the best I can to be there. But you know, someone had to be the breadwinner, you know,
and every family has to make that decision. What works for them. Right.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And there should be no guilt about it one way or the other.
Yeah. And my wife was like in the early stages, she was like, she's all about wanting to stay at home. She loved it, you know, but now the kids are older and they really don't need her anymore. And like, she works in education. So she gets the summers off, but like now that the kids are older, she's just bored all summer. bothers me all summer. You know, I'm like, she's like, how much flirting in the pool can I do? You know?
Well, as I have been reminded, kids of all ages always need you, right?
Yeah, that's
the question of how I'm consuming that need is at every given stage of their lives, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, well, we got one that's going off to college and he's moving out soon, so that's going to be weird. It's the work-life balance is tough in this country. I saw the same thing. You know, there was a lot of struggling attorneys. They were struggling with alcoholism. And they were just overworked and just overstressed. And it just, I honestly felt bad for them because like Saturday, Sunday, I'm like, they're still in the office. Like these guys would never leave, you know, they were just calling us all the time. And, so you gotta find what works for you.
And I would say this too, there comes a point of diminishing returns. If you're that strung out with work, you're not going to be able to work at your maximum capacity and capability. So it is really important to schedule in and you know, make it a point in your schedule just like anything else, right? This is the time that I go for my walk. This is the time I go to the gym. This is the time that I, you know, whatever it is that you need and that you know gives you that mental and physical break. Make it as important and non-movable a part of your schedule as, you know, as any other important part of your schedule.
Yeah, no, I agree. You have to find something, some kind of outlet. Rich and I play golf. And once a week, we block off the calendar. Like, nope, not taking any appointments. Calendar's blocked off. And that's our time to go play golf and just blow some steam. And it's, you feel so much better afterwards. You really do. Yeah. You know?
And look, clients respect that. You know, I used to be afraid to say to clients, hey, I'm in the middle of dinner. You know, can I call you later? I was always available, and I would be walking out of family dinners, crazy important events in my life. And when I finally started saying, hey, you know, in text, hey, can I call you back? I'm at a family dinner, or, you know, I'm not available tonight. Clients respect that. They understand. Yeah. They have family obligations too. If it's a true emergency, look, I practice emergency law, right? Criminal defense. If a person's being arrested, or there's, you know, the FBI shows up with a search warrant, obviously that's going to be an emergency that takes me away from whatever I'm doing. But right. For those non-emergency things, clients respect that you have personal space and personal time.
Exactly. Yep.
So, you know, remember that. And they want a lawyer who's going to be sharp because they've gotten enough sleep and they've gotten enough of a break.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've run on like 3 hours of sleep for days, and I was basically useless. You know, yeah. I was just a body just sitting there. Like, I couldn't make any right decisions. I couldn't be creative. I couldn't come up with any solutions, and just didn't make any sense. So yeah absolutely. Self-care. Self-care is important.
Self-care is important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, look, I think as a community, the bar is very aware of these issues. And I see nationally, all of the local bar associations trying to do more to provide mental health care, peer counseling, for attorneys, because I think it is a real problem. And one that no one should be embarrassed that they're feeling. Listen, there have been times where I have had intense cases where I'm fighting for somebody's life and their freedom and their reputation, and it's emotionally draining. It's emotionally punishing. And it's also physically punishing when you're involved in a long trial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I needed to reach out to people and say, talk to me. You know, I need to clear my head here. I need a little help. This hurts, right? This is emotionally punishing. And you've got to be able to reach out to people about that.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having that, you know, the outside shell of being invincible, and, you know, definitely, you know, really, you know, appreciate the, you know, talking about the vulnerability and the ability to, you know, and the need to, you know, seek help when it's needed. I think that's something that a lot of our audience, whether they're attorneys or not, really needs to, you know, to take to heart. And, you know, whether they're, you know, an accountant, an attorney, a doctor, whatever it is, you know, I think those stresses and those challenges go across the board. And I think it's really, really refreshing to hear, you know, you talk about your experience with that. And I think our audience is going to be very, very appreciative and grateful to hear that coming, you know, from you as well.
I hope so. I mean, you know, and I do say to young lawyers too, if you're feeling stressed about your career, you don't know which way to turn, avail yourself of the mentoring programs in the bar associations. And look, not all people are warm and fuzzy. Not all people are open and available, but, you know, find those people that you know you can reach out to. And don't be embarrassed. Don't be afraid. We've all been there. And I say that to my peers as well. You know, we're all in it together. We're all going through that. Reach out.
Yeah. And I hate to wrap this up, and I know we're coming up on our time constraints. And you know, we'd love to have you, you know, again as a guest. If that's something that you would be open to.
Absolutely. I would love it. You guys are great. I'm enjoying speaking with you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before we wrap everything up, if you don't mind, you know, sharing with our audience, where they can find you, your website, and just, you know, just a little summary of all of the services you provide. I know we talked about South Florida, New York, New Jersey, but if you don't mind telling our audience again where they can find you, website, sure. All that, so that we can, you know, be respectful of your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I'm a partner at Cudman Tracton Allo Posner. We are a New York based law firm, and we also have offices in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. My direct line here is 561-472-0811. Feel free to call that number or our New York number, which is 212-868-1010. I am the head and chair of the White Collar and Government Enforcement Group within my firm, but we are a commercial, transactional, and litigation firm, and we service business professionals, healthcare providers, all basically, you know, all services and goods, commercial companies and individuals. So please feel free to reach out with any questions. If we can't take care of it, we certainly know other lawyers who can.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. Arash, yeah, I mean, anything we want to wrap up with? This has been an incredible pod. So Tama, thank you very much for hopping on with us and being so generous with your time.
Thank you.
I am curious about one thing. Like I said, you have an acting background. Were you in anything we could recognize?
Oh gosh, no. I was a professional student of acting. I studied
in
New York City, and I performed in, you know, summer theater and stuff like that.
Theater and things.
Actually, got to take it professional. With that training, of course.
I'm just saying, like, I could definitely see you in movies and shows, and you kind of remind me of Beth from Yellowstone.
Oh wow.
Yep.
Thank you.
You could pull that off, right?
Hey, listen, I'm available. Any talent agencies out there that are looking to cast something, I'm signable.
Never know. Yeah. Beautiful. Give her a call, guys.
Yep.
All right, so yeah, we appreciate having you all. You've been a fantastic guest. Thank you so much again. And we hope you have a great day.
Thanks, guys. You too.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of the Next Level Law Podcast with your hosts, Arash Eskandari and Richard Perillo. We hope you discovered some game-changing takeaways to implement immediately for leveraging your law firm growth. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review and rating on your preferred platform to help get the word out. You can also visit vertical10.com to access free law firm growth resources and a free copy of Arash's book, The Law Firm Marketing Blueprint. Finally, remember to join Arash and Richard next time as they continue revealing their best strategies for taking your firm to the next level. Until then, here's to your success.